From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score. Killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
Time again for The Media Project. No, I'm not Rex Smith. He's away this week. This is Mike Spain, associate editor at the Times Union, filling in. And joining us this week is WAMC's CEO, commentator, columnist, and so much more, Alan Shartok. Alan?
Hello, Mike.
Also, we have Kaylin Brown, who's the chair of the Department of Communication at the College of St. Rose in Albany, and Judy Patrick, the vice president for editorial development at the New York Press Association. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks.
Wait a minute, to both of you. There's three of us here.
Happy New Year. Almost.
Okay, so I'm going to start this program by just saying this is a momentous day for all of us here because Mike Spain, a man who we worship and think of as one of the great guys in all journalism, is retiring. And he's been writing for the same institution for 40 years, and that's a long time. But of course, nothing like, you know, other people who will die with their boots on. You've decided not to do that, haven't you?
I don't know what I'm going to be wearing at that time, but I am. It's true. After 40 years at Hearst's Albany newspapers, 10 years at the Knickerbocker News, and 30 years at the Times Union, I'm starting a new chapter after today and looking forward to it. But I hope to do some interesting things. Judy Patrick, who left the Daily Gazette a couple of years ago, is a good model. She's made a good career for herself, and I hear her on the radio, and I know that she's very active with the New York Press Association. So, I have some models to follow. I'm not going away.
Can we put it a little differently? Are you open to offers?
Yes. My email? No. Only kidding.
I'm going to pipe in here because Mike hired me at the Knickerbocker News back in 1988, and he was one of the best editors I ever had. The very first assignment Mike gave me, which I will never forget, he looked at me and he said, please sit down and write your own obituary. Welcome to newspapers, people. I looked at him, I thought he was joking. He was dead serious. That wasn't meant to be a pun. But Mike was a supporter of all of the reporters he worked with over years and years, and was a solution person, always trying to find solutions to constant problems that are always arising in the world of journalism, a positive force in the newsroom.
So does he have a tough side to him? We've all said that Mike is the nicest man we've ever met. But, you know, in newspapers, you got to be able to say no, and you got to be able to say, look, madam, we did a good job here.
Oh, he's very serious about his journalism.
Well, I think that anybody who's been an editor at a newspaper is going to disappoint some people and make some people very angry. And certainly I've had my share. You have, Judy. I'm sure you've had to.
You know, I'd like to pipe in here as well as one of the regrets of my life is that I was actually never a reporter for Mike Spain because I hear he was a pretty spectacular editor. And editors are the unsung heroes of journalism. You don't get to see their name. And the people who listen to WAMC know Mike Spain, but a lot of the people who read the Times Union don't understand what an impact he has on every story that gets in that newspaper. Reporters get all the glory, but the editors are so instrumental. I worry about that going forward, that the role of the editor will diminish as you'll rely more and more on social media to create our news, and then the integrity that editors bring to the process, that's where the integrity comes from. And there's nobody really with more integrity than Mike Spain.
Well, that's awfully nice. I really appreciate it.
Bravo.
But
before we go any further, I mean, I don't want to stop there. I mean, I'm prepared to spend the whole time, on you, Mike. But you have something called an institutional memory. And think about that. You know where it's all been in the region that your newspaper covers. And you can't transfer that. It's not like one of those things you put into the computer.
A thumb drive? No,
that's the one.
Right, onto the thumb drive.
Well, especially because the world of reportorial skills and doing journalism is very transient. You know, reporters run all around from newspaper to newspaper trying to move up the ladder. Often editors stay in the place where they originated, or, you know, they have more, as you said, institutional memory. You'd run up to Mike's desk and he would say, oh, you need to call this person, or this is the street it's on, because, well, he does have that institutional memory.
It is an issue. As we kind of began preparing for this end-of-year discussion for the Media Project to talk about some of the big media stories, but the biggest story is the continued erosion of staff at newspapers and other media entities across the country. And you're right, editors are in the background. And it's always a controversy when a newspaper has to lose some staff or can't fill an opening because of economics. Do you want more editors, or do you want to have more reporters, people on the street, you know, feet on the street, as we sometimes call them? And if you don't have people out reporting, editors won't have anything to edit.
Yeah, I want to go to a different place here. I've watched newspaper editors. I've seen some great ones, some really fair people, some nice people. We have one sitting right next to me, Judy Patrick, who doesn't take any baloney, but who really has a sense of what's right. And Mike, you have that, no question. But I've also seen editors over the years in different places who are not so nice and who have a personal agenda and are going to fill those hands. We're lucky here. We have you, we have Judy, we have Rex. But there are people who don't have that integrity. And once you get somebody ensconced who is one of those editors, you got a real problem.
Usually there's some sort of mini revolt in the newsroom when you have an editor that the reporters view as biased, or you will have people leave the paper. I mean, reporters are used to challenging authority, and they're not hesitant to challenge the authority of their bosses at all.
You're right. I think that it's a very collegial atmosphere at a newspaper. And when somebody tries to be domineering and be a top-down demander, they don't do that with some respect for the colleagues. It isn't like hierarchy. The editor is on top of the reporter, and the reporter has to do everything the editor says.
And the publisher, by the way, is on top of the editor.
Well, right.
And sometimes you get a publisher who isn't so nice.
But I think that the relationship between an editor and a reporter should be collegial, because the reporter is doing something the editor can't do, and that is go out and get the story. And if you don't trust the reporter, you know, the situation won't work. So the editor can't correct for a reporter's deficits. A reporter has to be good at what they do, and an editor has to respect that. On the other hand, a reporter has to respect what an editor adds to the process.
Well, you know, Mike, sorry to pursue this, but, you know, we just had John Roberts, the Supreme Court leader, judge,
say
that
Chief Justice,
there's no such thing as a Democratic judge or a Republican judge. But I have seen over the years there is such a thing as a Republican judge or a Democratic judge. And I have also seen that editors can have fierce views about things, which are then transmitted to the troops.
Well, that's a topic that gets a lot of discussion, especially nowadays, where we can't completely divorce ourselves from our character, from our psyche and how we were brought up and the era in which we lived. If you were an editor during the 1950s and you had the McCarthy hearings going on, you might act very differently than if you were an editor during the 1980s. You know, people are affected by their experiences. It's a fact of life, and to deny that an editor is not influenced by their lifetime experience, it defies reality. I mean, we bring our biases, if you want to call that, to the job, and we can't completely eliminate them, although we do try. And the best way to do that, I think, is to get diversity in the newsroom, diversity of opinion, to get people from diverse backgrounds, get men, women, people of color, people from different ethnic backgrounds, people from different parts of the country, because people in the Northeast think differently than the people in the Midwest. And if you can get people in your newsroom with, and that's a difficult challenge, but if you can get people with a broad sense of the way things are, it adds to the product.
Well, all very philosophical on your part.
Yes, very philosophical.
I've heard similar things from Kaylin, Dr. Brown, who makes it clear what the perfect world in journalism might be. On the other hand, you used the word there that I thought was very appropriate, and that is character. The character of an individual, as we all know, I've quoted it a number of times, Freud said, starts very early. If you get a guy or a woman who is an editor who's a rat and can sort of hold on there because of their readiness, that can be very telling.
Well, there's good editors and there's editors that aren't as good. And
that's
we've probably all experienced them in our careers, haven't we?
I have.
And Mike has left his print right on the Times Union. Professionalism was encouraged there. The respect that every reporter I ever worked with for Mike was noticeable. Because it wasn't, you could see the relationships between reporters and editors, I remember.
No question.
I remember one headline where a book went sailing through the air from one reporter to the head of an editor. It was not Mike. But that was the opposite of the relationships that Mike encouraged in the newsroom.
Professor, just to keep it real here, mm-hmm. That's what I like to do with you. I like to keep it real. Have you ever had an editor who you thought was an ogre?
I did, and Mike Spain saved me from that editor, one of the editors. In fact, that's very true. I was on the business desk at the Times Union and working for an editor, and sometimes we didn't see eye to eye, including, I think I've brought this up on this program before, there was a story I was working on about sexual harassment in the workplace. Now think about this. This was 20-something years ago, and the editor was reticent about publishing that story until, you know, he put the brakes on it, actually, till after the Clarence Thomas debacle. But the pressure was building, and Mike saved the day. I said, Mike, is there any place else in the newsroom I could work? And he found me a place.
Well, sometimes finding the right role for people in the newsroom is the key to success. And I'm sure, Judy, you've had reporters who worked out better when they had a different opportunity in the newsroom. And that is an editor's job, is to sort of match a person's talents and skills with the job, the specific job that needs to be done. And you can't always do it. And sometimes you have a couple of people who would make great education writers, and you only need one. So you have to have someone be the police reporter or something, and that may not be their strongest suit. But
just as long as they're not the media reporter.
Right.
Judy, that called for an answer.
Yeah.
You know, that's true. And that you sometimes get reporters and beats they absolutely hate. And mm-hmm. At one point, I thought, well, a reporter can do any job. A sports reporter could do crime. But I don't think it's true.
Yeah. You like to think that the generalist is the best kind of reporter. And in one sense, you know, your entertainment writer might have to go out and cover a murder or a fire story if he's the only one sitting there when it happens. And sometimes they're capable of doing that. But people do have specialties, and they become very focused in the topics that they cover, like a business writer. Mm-hmm. You know, they speak businessese, you know, or sports writers speak mm-hmm. Sportuguese, as I like to call it. And they cannot focus on other areas because they just have so much interest in something. And that's the reality of managing a newsroom. It's finding people who can do, over time, moving them to where they're going to be the happiest and do the best that they can do, you know?
Yeah, I also want to say that an editor, like Mike, is a reporter's best friend, because the editor will save the reporter multiple times. They'll say, are you sure this is the right fact? Are you sure this is a valid story? Are you sure that you're not missing something? And that gets forgotten a lot of times.
Yeah, I think the unsung heroes, the line editors and the copy editors. I mean, when I say line editors, it might be the assistant city editor that you're working for, or the business editor, or the sports editor, where you're sitting with the person and they save you time and again. And when an error gets into the newspaper or, you know, gets published online, everybody blames the reporter and everybody's upset. But you have no idea how many errors don't get published because of the good work of a copy editor or a line editor, a city editor who's asked another question or just knew, because they'd been there a long time, what the context was for something that they're editing before it gets published.
You said something that I found fascinating. You mentioned the word business. Now, some cities, Albany has one, has a publication, a weekly publication, that is devoted entirely to business, right?
Yes, the Business Review. I used to work for them. Yeah, in fact, I came from the Business Review to the
Business
Neck
Review.
News.
Right, right, right. So
it's a very good publication.
Well, I don't always agree with that, but yeah, it's another whole story. But I do think that some of the assignments and some of the priorities that are given from newspapers may be because they know there's a level of competition. So, for example, your business department at a place like the Times Union has to be aware that there's another publication out there that they're competing with, and therefore you may have to put more emphasis on it, right?
Well, certainly competition makes it. The best thing that happens for readers and the public in the Times Union or in the Capital Region area is that there are competing newspapers. If there was just one newspaper, it was calling the shots, there would be a lack of energy. It's when you have competition doing a good job, it compels you to do a good job.
Sure. But if that other newspaper, like the Business Review, weren't there, would the priority to emphasize business be the same at the TU as if it was there?
Well, I think you also have to look at your audience. If you believe that your readership is strictly people in the business community, you might devote a lot more resource to covering business.
No
question. But our business coverage is more broad. We cover business for the broader population. So when something goes on in business, we put it in the context of, you know, what it means to the consumer, not just what it means to other people in business. It's not strictly B2B, as they say, business to business.
Which is the Business Review.
Yeah, and the Business Review is aimed at the business community, and they do it, I think, extraordinarily well. And we pick up a lot of stories we see there and we attribute it to them, and then we try to follow them ourselves.
That's interesting.
And I think they get a lot from reading us. It benefits the entire community when you have a Daily Gazette or a Business Review or other publications and other online publications and radio and television in there. It's all part of a tapestry. And, you know, I'm very proud of the Times Union. We're very fortunate that we're the largest newspaper in the region and we have a lot of resources, but we get beat. We get beat by the Daily Gazette a lot. And if they weren't there, we'd get lazy and the public would not benefit.
Okay, so that raises an issue. And we're very lucky that we have you here, Mike, on the last day of your employment, and Judy, who, of course, was the editor of the Gazette for so
long. Well, let me just say this. I want to remind listeners that this is The Media Project, a presentation of Northeast Public Radio, and with us today are Dr. Alan Chartok, Dr. Kaylin Brown, Judy Patrick, and I'm Mike Spain. Thank you.
Okay, so we have the two of you, and it's something I've often wondered about, and that is geographic spheres of influence. So the Times Union has a rather wide circulation. The Gazette, Schenectady paper, had the Independent Gazette had. But has there ever been collusion, as the president might say? Has there ever been an understanding, you stay out of here and I'll stay out of there?
I'm unaware of any deal like that, Senator.
I'm unaware of such a deal.
No. But, I mean, we talk about news deserts. The Capital Region certainly isn't a news desert when you think about the core coverage area. But I think some of the smaller places in our area, the outlying towns that we used to go to every zoning and town board, those small communities are starting to become news deserts. I mean, one of the things I do now is work with weekly, you know, the hundreds of weekly newspapers and some dailies in New York State. They're still out there, but even that number is shrinking every week. But even at the Gazette and probably at the Times Union and at the Saratogian and the Troy Record in this region, they're not getting to all the little places that we used to get to.
No, I agree with you. It's remarkable. And Kaylin can probably recall when she started at the Times Union, if you went and covered a town board meeting, there would be two or three other reporters there.
Very much.
And that doesn't happen anymore. We don't go to a lot of town board meetings, to a lot of school board meetings. Who's watching these entities? You know, citizens are active, and there's, you know, always the gadflies that go, and you might get tipped. Now a reporter can sit and watch a live stream of a meeting or watch a videotape on a website of a meeting, but you don't know if you're getting the whole context. There's not as many of us, and you have to worry about, I mean, what do you prepare students for?
Well, you know, nature abhors a vacuum. We know that. Yeah. And we also know that online journalism is a lot less expensive than putting out a newspaper like yours.
There's no cost of newsprint and there's no cost to run a press and to distribute a newspaper.
Where I come from in Berkshire County, for example, is the Berkshire Eagle, which does a fine job. And then there's a new contender. The Berkshire Edge, which does a fine job also, but doesn't have the resources of the Berkshire Eagle. But obviously, because, as I say, nature does abhor a vacuum, we're going to be seeing a lot of change, aren't we?
I think that was one of the topics we wanted to talk about, the media stories of 2018. And yes, that is the change. It is the evolution of news and what's going on, and it's going on very fast. I mean, what are you preparing students for today, Dr. Brandt?
In the meantime, we do still send students down to City Hall to cover public meetings because I want students at the very least to understand how democracy is working or not working and go and bear witness, and then they're required to report stories. They are still learning the basics about how do I identify a story? How do I conduct an interview? I mean, these are very basic skill sets that reporters take for granted, but a coming up reporter doesn't know how to ask a question.
But if they find a job at a daily newspaper, they're fortunate enough to find a job when they graduate, they probably won't be sent to a lot of town board meetings because we simply don't have the staff to do it. How do you cover that?
But if I may, Kaylin just mentioned the idea of City Hall. Now, City Hall is not exactly one of the regular town board meetings, you know, the planning board or something else. But yet, Kaylin, the question I would have for you is when a town mayor chokes somebody or something of that kind.
My students all know how to file a Freedom of Information request, and every semester since 1993, Bob Freeman from the Committee on Open Government has come into my classes to file Freedom of Information. So with the case of the Cohoes mayor who...
Is that who you were talking about?
Well, the Times Union has reported extensively about the mayor in the city of Cohoes, a small city in Albany County, where police have investigated more than one occasion allegations that...
Yeah, but that wasn't my point.
Yes. Right,
my point was, intuitively, do your students know that the story about the mayor choking somebody or allegedly choking somebody may be a lot more important than a huge multi-million-dollar budget for a city?
What is important and what is not important is in the eyes of the beholder, and I know you know that. So,
was that a shot?
No. The budget is just as important to many people who can barely afford to pay for their
heat
and hot water. Absolutely, absolutely. People go to the budget meeting in City Hall, but that's a practicality question. Most college students don't have a car, so they can take the bus line for free from St. Rose down to City Hall, and that's why that assignment, it's a very practical
Something
assignment.
I mentioned the other day, ease of coverage.
Yes. Well, they're kids.
Yeah, but one of the things to keep in mind when we're not going to the town meetings and we're not going to City Hall, any good reporter will tell you that's where the stories come from. When you make your rounds in City Hall, where you stop and you talk to all the different assistants, or when you're at a town board meeting and someone pulls you out into the hall and whispers something in your ear, that's where the real reporting comes in. You're making contacts with the people in the village and or in the town or the city, and that shoe leather reporting that we talk about, when the young reporters are so used to sitting at their computers and trying to surf the web and find news, the news really isn't happening in the newsroom. It's out in the streets. And pushing those kids out from the newsroom was one of the challenges I found in my last months on the job.
Well, with just a minute to go in today's media project, what do you see as the, this is like lightning round, what do you see, Dr. Brown, as the biggest issue facing us in 2019 in the field of journalism?
To work as hard as we can to get the best stories accurate.
I think the erosion of truth that's happening and our battle to fight it and to continue fighting for the truth.
And Dr. Shartok.
Trump.
Trump is the biggest challenge to journalism in 2019?
Without question.
And what about you, Mike?
Well, I agree that truth and Trump is somebody who has maybe an abusive relationship with the truth. So I'm agreeing with you both. And accuracy and truth are the same thing. So I guess I agree with you all. And with that, this wraps up the last media project of 2018. I'd like to thank Dr. Alan Shartok, Dr. Kaylin Brown of the College of St. Rose, and Judy Patrick for joining us this week. I'm Mike Spain, and thanks for listening.
They all got tired of patches on their pants. They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. When they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild. Got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill. All together fits the bill.
The Media Project is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Alan Shartok is CEO of WAMC, Professor Emeritus at the State University of New York, commentator, columnist, and author. Kaylin Brown is chair of the Department of Communication at the College of St. Rose. Judy Patrick is the vice president for editorial development for the New York Press Association. And Mike Spain is the associate editor of the Times Union. You can listen to or podcast The Media Project anytime at WAMC.org or just download the WAMC app for your iPhone or Android at the Play Store today. Thanks for listening.
Such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.